America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's Mike Schoep and the Bulldog.
Fakes the handoff, fakes the throw, comes back. Wide open in the end zone is Mac Hollins for a 2-yard touchdown reception. Wide open Ray Davis, 45-50, 45-40, still on his feet. He's going to go. 20-10-5, touchdown Ray Davis. Rolls to his right, looking to pass, now gets hit as he throws, and it's caught in the end zone by Quinton Morris. His first catch of the season. Snap by Ferguson, hold by Martin. Kick by Bass is long enough.
I think I got my swagger back.
And it is good! Bobs away for Tyler Bass!
The show goes on, because I ain't going nowhere!
The WGR Sports Radio 550.
What's up, Buffalo Bills football Monday? Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. Eric Wood, Sal Capaccio on the... it's your word, but docket for today. Sorry.
You almost had to, you had to go with docket there.
Once I got into the on the, I couldn't escape. I was
schedule,
docket committed.
Schedule, I guess. I mean, you could have worked with that.
On the schedule.
Slate.
The slate, yeah. On the sheet here in front of me.
Yeah. Bill, just simply on the show.
On the show.
That works, too.
Let's start over. 7-2. Another win over Miami. Today... thinking about this had me, apart from wondering again, like what we're possibly going to talk about for the next 6 weeks, knowing that really none of this matters yet, is just another opportunity to put some put all this into perspective. You know? So since the beginning of 2020, the Bills in the regular season, this is all just going to be regular season, are 55-20. They have been better than that for one stretch of 75 games in their history, since at least the merger. Super Bowl era is all I did.
Okay.
If you don't put Super Bowl era, you just get the Otto Graham Browns. Pages and pages of Otto Graham's Browns teams. So I just left them out of it.
I mean, no
apples to oranges.
I mean, no disrespect to the Otto Graham Browns, but they're not germane right now.
Apples to peach baskets.
Yeah.
Just can't make that work. From the beginning of the 1988 season to the middle of the 1992 season, 75 games, the Bills were 56-19. One game better than this, 55-20. And because really, I've said this a lot this year, and I know not everybody would think this way, but it's just so all about the playoffs. There's really nothing otherwise that they haven't proven. They've beaten good teams. They've won away. They've won at night. They've won here. They've won big. They've won enough of the close games, really. Like, there's nothing left in the regular season for them to exactly prove. It's just all about the playoffs, but we don't just all just want to walk around constantly making it, thinking like that, you know? So.
Yeah. Well, there is one thing they have not proven yet in any of these great regular seasons. That they were capable of having the best regular season in any of those years.
Okay.
Amongst all the teams. And to me, that is what the next few weeks will be about. We'll see. I mean, I need the Chiefs to lose a game here at some point. I mean, ideally, it would be great if they would lose a game one of these next 2 weeks before they come here, because then if the Bills hold serve here, beat Indianapolis on Sunday, then they'll be playing for the top seed in the conference. And sure, I recognize that the schedule is going to get pretty grisly from there. You know, we're in a nice little comfortable pocket here, I think, of the schedule. But you've got more, you know, they don't play again until at 1 o'clock on a Sunday until almost Christmas from here.
After this week.
After this week, right. So you've got the Niners, you've got the Chiefs, you've got the Lions. The Rams game even looks like, you know, more than you might have thought it would be back in, I don't know, even September or October with the way they've been playing lately. But still, I think it's worth investing in the idea of them being the top team in the conference. They have never had that. They did have the benefit of playing the Bengals and the Chiefs at home the last 2 years in the divisional round, but that came on the heels of having to play in the wild card round. So they have not ever been home and rested like that come divisional round games. So could that make a difference? I mean, almost certainly it could. And I think that's still in the window. And tonight is huge for that. The Chiefs have Denver next week.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Tampa, and, you know, they're diminished with their receivers hurt. So, you know, wing and a prayer time maybe. But I mean, I'm going to be watching this game until it's not competitive anymore, if it ever gets uncompetitive.
Which Chief games this year really rarely have.
Right, that's
They've
right.
They've all been almost all been close.
Right.
Well, of course, that game here a week from Sunday could go so far. It will determine who wins in a tie in the standings. The winner of that game will win in the tiebreaker if it comes to that. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to say, though, like, I mean, we can all know to do it. 55-20 over 75 games is, I mean, that is elite. And it really just, I think, tells you what we also already knew, which is they just have to win one. You know, with a stretch like that, because all the teams, I spent a good amount of time looking this up today, like all the teams that have been that successful for that long, you know, that's closer to five seasons in the older days, or even maybe more than five seasons in a 14 game world than it is now, but still. The teams that have managed a stretch of 75 games with at least 55 wins, it is basically two groups of teams. It is the dynasties any football fan can name. Mm-hmm. It's the Patriots, you know, the early Patriots, maybe even also the later Patriots, but certainly the earlier teams had great records. It's the Aikman Cowboys, you know, like it's Miami in the 70s when they went undefeated. It's those teams that every fan knows all about that go down with the all-time greats. And it's teams that either they won one to basically give themselves the relief, you know, they don't go down as quote losers. It's not the right word, but they don't go down as the teams that NFL films made that special chapter of
missing rings.
The missing rings.
Right.
Like the Tarkenton Vikings are one of these teams.
Right.
59-16 in the early 70s for Bud Grant and the Vikings, which is, again, that's better than the Bills have gone, but they got to the Super Bowl three times in those years, or four, but never won. And you have like the worst of these teams are teams that are famous for not winning, or the, you know, like the ones like the Manning Broncos. You better win, you know, if you're winning on that kind of a clip in the regular season, you just sort of stand out without a championship. The 70s Raiders, you'd remember this, you were there.
Sure.
60-15 for the 70s. This is the earlier 70s Raiders before they won in 77 or 76 season, I guess. And I've watched a lot on those teams. That's what they were famous for. They were famous for losing to Pittsburgh or Miami.
Right.
The Bills have lost to Kansas City and Cincinnati.
Immaculate reception is in that pocket of seasons, I think.
Even the Cowboys, yes. Even the Cowboys, before they won Super Bowl VI, were like, get to the playoffs and lose. So that's what this is. And I'm not saying all this to tell you something that you don't already know or would feel if you pay attention to it. Like, you're not surprised that the Bills have had this tremendous regular season success rate over the last four plus years. You know that. And you also know they haven't won. But it really is, if you look up the teams, 70s Raiders, early 2000s Colts. That's the comp we make all the time.
Right.
You know, the Manning Colts against the Patriots. And
Can't do it. Did it. Still got talked about like they couldn't do it. But still, they did finally do it.
At least you couldn't say that.
Right.
Some people still wanted to, but you really couldn't say it.
You could correct them factually. Yes.
They couldn't do it until they did.
Right.
The current Chiefs right now are 59 and 16 over the same 75 games. And that includes three losses to the Bills, by the way. The Manning Broncos, the McNabb Eagles, 57 and 18. Chuck Knox's Rams, which did not get to a Super Bowl until after he left, 57 and 18. That was the key.
They had to get rid of him.
They had to get rid of Chuck Knox.
Yeah. Hold him back, clearly.
Steve Young's 49ers that finally won in, actually, in that case, their record, it was the, I think 94 was like the beginning of that stretch for them. They were great through the 90s, but Green Bay beat them and they didn't get back after 94. And then you have the Bills in 88. 88 to 92, like I mentioned, 56 and 19. So, you know all this. The numbers are there. And really, a game like yesterday, 7-2, running away with the division, beating Miami again. What is Miami supposed to do anymore? You know, why bother at this point?
Right.
It just sort of all reinforces the only thing that's left, and that's a championship.
Right. And, you know, you can choose to whatever extent this makes you happy, sort of, you know, reflect on how great this has been, how much fun it is, just how great a team they've been. But, you know, I don't know how far that really gets you. You know, it's funny that you started here, though, with, like, their record and how excellent they are. And obviously, you know, Josh Allen's excellence has been at the forefront of all of that. And I woke up today thinking about how he does stuff now in games. Like, he didn't jump over anyone yesterday, so there wasn't a ton of hyperbole about his performance. How many quarterbacks in the league are making that touchdown throw to Quentin Morris? Like, it's an incredible play. I watched it live. I saw the replay. I knew he was under duress. It's just an incredible play. And the margins are so slim. Like, he is a half a second away from that being a disaster. Like, it could be one of those plays where you're like, oh, you know, sugar high. Try to do too much. You know, take your field goal, second down. What are you doing here? Right? That kind of. But he makes that play under such duress. I mean, it's the most incredible throw of his career. I think it was just a little flip to Quentin Morris, but.
This is, man, the quarterback's. Josh Allen's version of overthinking it?
Yeah, I guess maybe. Yeah. It's a spectacle. And it's so common that it doesn't even, like, neither of us nor anyone who calls into the show yesterday after the game feels like specifically they want to mention that play. It's just kind of like, yeah, you know, he did the thing that he does, which is insane, kind of, but, you know, he did it. And I love that about him. And, you know, I'm not even calling us out. I mean, I didn't think to mention it either. But I saw the highlight a bunch of times last night, and I just thought, that's a bonkers great play that we kind of take for granted now because he's that good.
Those are interesting because you have to hit it. You know, these are like desperation threes in basketball. Why didn't you just do something? You know, mm-hmm. These are plays that it's 10-1. Maybe that you get blamed, you get criticized for it. It's in the spotlight if that pass is intercepted. You know, the it's tipped out of his hand or something, and like, oh, this is the play that mm-hmm. you just never sort of forget. It maybe not fans as much as people just objectively and be like, but he does this sometimes and helps get you beat. You know, they might have needed that play to win this game yesterday. They pretty much needed everything they got.
They needed everything they got, including a 61-yard field goal. Sure, right. Geno Smith against the Rams. last night is some version of this, right? I mean, that's a tie game, I think, at the time. They're about to go in, and he's scrambling around under duress, and he throws it, and like, oh, no, dude. Other way, 103 yards. See you later. So, yeah, the margins are very fine. But I'm not being critical. I'd be most critical of myself for not really thinking about it yesterday at any point. It's just they got like a one of one there playing. Mahomes is certainly, and Jackson, like, there are other great, but it's just the stuff he does that doesn't even move the meter for us anymore is still remarkable.
Well, that's kind of, and I think that's where you started here. Like that's kind of the point on the whole team overall,
right,
and him just. You walked out of the stadium yesterday, and it was fun, and it was close, and there's so much to talk about from the game and everything that you love about going to games. And, you know, if you're like me, you're walking out thinking about, like, how many times in the last 5 years this has happened, which is, like, what, 20 times? I mean, at least, maybe,
yeah.
Where it doesn't have to be a close game. You might like it more if it isn't. But you've got highlights, you've got winning, you've got, you know, just like everything you want as a fan. And they tell you, like, my kids are growing up, you know, almost not quite, but getting to the point, starting to see them leaving, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And what does everybody always say about that? You just got to appreciate the time you have. Appreciate the, you know, the little things, the things about when they drive you crazy. Think about something else, you know, just to appreciate their being there. And that's really the point here, is just very few teams ever have had a stretch of almost 5 years as quality as this. And I know, like, that can either be enough, or that can make it even more like, oh, please win. I mean, the Bills before, not the drought. The drought isn't something that, like, fans of other teams really even know about or care about. We lived it and we know about it, but the Bills history is by far most significant for the Super Bowl losses. Like, that's their place in history, is getting to four in a row and losing them all. That's unprecedented. And so I'm not saying it's terrible. It's just like, that's their most famous accomplishment in franchise history. I don't know what second is. I mean, it's not the drought. Nobody cares about that, except for us. So here, now you've got this franchise and these years where it's kind of close to okay, you know, just like with those teams, it was, okay, you have to win now, though. And that's really what this is. I mean, thinking about 7-2 in the season, you've said a few times, one thing I think you like maybe the most about this year is nobody seems like they're too good for them.
Right.
Of course, that means except for Detroit, but that nobody, just right. kidding, that nobody seems like they're too good for them, which I think can be said.
I definitely feel that way about the conference, but yeah, Detroit is you know, looming there.
Yeah, I don't really,
but
I'm not thinking about them at all. But
still, like, I do not think the Ravens are head and shoulders, like, I just don't see it. And I know what the game looked like a few weeks ago, and nor are the Chiefs. I mean, I think the Bills are on the level with those teams, just like they have been. Like, that really, to me, has not changed over the course of this stretch. It's been consistent. I mean, Baltimore dipped once with Jackson injured, but mostly, like, these three teams have been at the top of the conference. And sure, there's, you know, the Bengals have had a turn, and maybe they're not, you know, done for this year yet. You know, the Texans are new. I'm not sure. I'm not, you know, never been that sold on them. There's nobody that looks to me like a problem. You know, I mean, I have a problem beating the Chiefs or the Bengals in January, but I can't really do anything about that in November. And I'm not even play Cincinnati. So I just don't see a team that is in the way.
Well, I want this both ways, because I think that kind of, I mean, it easily can be said. It might be kind of just right. But they're also not so good. You know, like, some of these stretches in that 75 games, the Bills have been more than, I think, what they look like now. What they look like now is you've got Allen's heroics. They're pretty good otherwise. You know, defense is pretty good. Maybe better than that, but maybe not. There have been injuries. Yesterday was not amazing or anything defensively. And I think, you know, that's kind of what it is, but that can be good enough.
Right. That's where the rest of the conference really comes into play. Because here's a year where the Bills really turned it over hard. A lot of dead money, a lot of veteran, a lot of leadership, a lot of new moving parts. And they're in as good a position as they've been in any of these years. And in part, that to me is because the conference, even though the Chiefs are sitting there at 7-0 and they play tonight, I just don't feel like there's anybody that looks like they're going to run away. And so, you know, just play your games, take care of your business, make your kicks, you know, especially if they're 61-yard game winners. And we'll see where we're at here. But to me, like, that's still in the window, the top seed. And I was not thinking about it at all when this year began. But they have the record and the opponent upcoming here that, to me, brings it right back into center stage.
But that's not the Colts.
That is not the Colts. It was not the Colts.
Yes, speaking of the Colts being, the Manning Colts being one of these teams where the Bills are kind of an easy comp, here is Indianapolis this week. Bills -4.5 and 47 for this game, I guess against Flacco.
Yep.
The body language. I love the body language. And acknowledge, you know, always that you're just guessing. I did this with McDermott and Allen, and I don't know that I was wrong, but just like watching them not interact or just what it is sometimes makes me wonder. And when they show Flacco, this happened last week a little bit too after Richardson. I guess maybe was that the case? Maybe it was when he was hurt. I forget. Never mind. Last night, he's just, every time they were on, how many times do you think they just cut to him sitting on the bench? 50?
Yeah.
In this game. And every time he's never talking, he's just looking off into space, you know, just sitting there, game's going by. And so many of the times, Richardson is like kneeling right in front of him, sort of perpendicular to him.
Yeah.
What's going on there?
I don't know. He's learning at his knee. Literally.
That's what he's doing.
It's like the optics are he's sitting at Joe's knee to learn how to do this properly.
Yeah, so not an easy night for them. Minnesota has been able to do that to teams with pass pressure, and they didn't exactly breeze, but Colts get a defensive touchdown that probably shouldn't have counted, and then Minnesota eventually gets the win and the cover. So Indy this week.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their six pools on three different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy daybeds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit MindfulTherapyGroup.com.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC's senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.
for the Bills. We had a coaching firing today we'll get to, and hopefully hear from you. 803-0550, perspective on all this or specifics to yesterday, which we'll also spend, of course, some time on. Football Monday brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. Eric Wood, 4 o'clock. Sal Capaccio at 5. Sean McDermott is scheduled to speak at or around 4. And at least for me, I mean, the big one is what will he have to say on Keon Coleman, if anything? You never get it after games, mm-hmm. but maybe by now McDermott is aware of the injury and just sort of what the prognosis might be for Coleman. So that's what's one thing, at least, that we're waiting on. And Sal will join us once that's over to fill us in. We'll talk about yesterday's win as well with him. 803-0550 to join us. Once again, Football Monday on WGR. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog, WGR.
I think it's fair to say an up and down road. A lot of promises here, starting 2-0 with an offense that looked electric. And then just injury upon injury. You looked out on the field yesterday in that loss to the Carolina Panthers. There was practice squad players out there you've never heard of. Chris Olave goes out early in the game. It's like Dennis Allen never had the roster he wanted, never seemed to have the starting lineup he wanted. It all led to a long losing streak, and now his firing.
I mean, never? How long should he get? Sometimes. Ian Rappaport, Dennis Allen, fired by the Saints, 43 games, 18-25. They do have injuries. He's not wrong, but what? It's just like he didn't have a chance? I don't know. I don't really think so. To me, this was just like always going to happen, but
yeah, they were. It was kind of shocking that they were as good as they were the first couple of weeks, and probably not realistically sustainable. I guess we'll never know because they did really get annihilated by injuries. Like their offensive line just got wrecked, and other stuff too. But that I think was
a lot of those guys are back.
Big problem. Yeah, they are now. Yeah,
some of them, I guess, but. Yeah, well, 2-7 doesn't really matter how.
Right. After here you are.
Third year makes you wonder about the Giants. Last week I mentioned that I wonder how much time Daboll has left. But there was another so-called vote of confidence there. They lose at home to Washington. We know this life. I mean, one of the worst things about being the Giants would be that Washington is 7-2. Like, where do they come from? What right does Washington have to be? Philadelphia, sure. Right. Dallas, okay. I'm used to that. Washington now? I mean, it's like watching, I don't know if Ottawa.
Right, that
makes
works.
The playoffs.
Right, like, right.
What? I was, you cut the line. You cut the line.
Right.
I was at the front of this line.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, that works as a comparison, I think. Yeah, so. So what? Yeah. I mean, the Giants, maybe they got to let those people pick their own guy, maybe? I don't know. It's just going to be tough. The conversation last week was, from my end anyway, was largely, I have a hard time imagining ownership appreciating Daboll's style. I just think he's very, I don't know, he's just kind of unkempt.
Angry?
Yeah, angry maybe. And boisterous. He's the guy at the party that everyone's like turning there. Who's that? Who's that making them? Who's raising a ruckus over there? He's a ruckus raiser. And I don't know. The Giants strike me as a pretty conservative, buttoned-up organization. So,
well, they're off to Germany to play Carolina this week, so get ready for that. Germany. Football Monday on WGR, the story of yesterday's game. Ultimately, Tyler Bass, I think, becomes the story of the game. And it's easy and it's popular, it's common for anybody to think that they would know kind of his emotions and what his confidence was at, just basically taking it from whether he's making or missing, you know, that you would think, you might think, people talk like they know what kind of where he's at mentally. You know, game to game or even mm-hmm. kick to kick. And that, of course, that came up on post game yesterday. A caller mentioned it. And I would just say again, I don't know who really does know that, you know, other than Bass himself and maybe a couple of people in his life.
Sure. Like whoever he talks to about, you know, analyzing the kicks he makes and misses and even in practice, like, you know, what's your swing like? What's your approach like? Whatever. The technical analysis that would. whoever is in charge of that and consults with him on that would know. I would think that's the kind of person you'd be confiding in. Like, I just don't feel good. I don't, you know, how am I, you know, this step or there's something. But yeah, it's a very small circle of people that would know.
You wouldn't want, if you're Bass, you would not want to admit that to very many people, right?
No, like, right.
In the office. If you're struggling right. with your confidence, that might be the last thing they need to hear mm-hmm. before making a move. Because then they might think that I can't trust this anymore. So that's complicated too. Like you sort of have to put, he probably was, I mean, it's loud out here. He probably was hearing, you know, criticism and mm-hmm. maybe a lack of confidence, whatever, however close that got to him.
He would obviously know that they brought a guy in to compete with
right.
him. I mean, there's no, even if you're, you know, able to numb yourself to all the noise out here, that was inescapable. You're coming to work and there's another car parked in the kicker section, you know, like, okay, right. I don't think they actually have a kicker section of the parking lot, but just work with me. You know, just that's a dude. Okay. Am I shook by this? Am I going to try harder because of this? These are all things we guess at. And what ended up happening is, you know, they needed, obviously, that kick. They didn't have to try it. I mean, it was a very long kick for him. And I don't know that every fan watching absolutely expected them to try the kick. I know I did, but it wasn't a no-brainer, but they did, and he made it, and now you just hope, like, all of that stuff is packed up somewhere and left behind, because you just made a huge kick, and you had this moment of redemption with your teammates. Like, not, you know, not that anything he's done has really cost them severely. It's more just the optics of he's missing these kicks. And what if he, you know, really the KC one last year is where you need to look at. What a huge kick with big impact that was that he missed. You know, now he's got to feel like at least like I did my part. You know, they stuck by me. However shaky it's been with this practice squad guy, I still got the job and I've come through. And, you know, hopefully he can like ride the wind of that right through the rest of the season and, you know, maybe even his whole career. I don't know, but we'll never really know. I doubt he, you know, maybe years later he'll
yeah.
tell you, like, you know, if they win a championship or something and he gets to write a book about what the struggle was like in October and November of the 24 season. But we probably will never have any idea.
It's there's a lot you can really say about it. You know, Sean McDermott or almost any NFL head coach, what particular skills do they have when it comes to coaching up kickers? You know, kickers are just different from the rest of the team. You know, you try to get guys to run through the wall, right? But your kicker, maybe maybe you just don't bother. You leave him alone. He's got a special teams coordinator, or probably they have three or four other assistants who might be mm-hmm. those that would kind of work with the kicker, either it's technical or just mental. McDermott, I thought, this is one, the postgame show when you stay home is one where, like, you and I can't talk as much about, like, the press conferences for one thing and certain things about the game. I thought McDermott was very happy with himself about Bass. He of course, and I don't think he didn't mean it, was sure to say a few different times how happy he was for Bass, but he was also happy for himself. He admitted, like, now I don't get to have to be asked these questions about him anymore. And the decision to kick it, we did a little bit yesterday on kind of the math there. With 10 seconds to go, what are you facing if he misses? You're facing probably a Hail Mary. And I know the Bills have given up a Hail Mary or two, but it's not like they had 20 seconds even.
Right. 5 seconds is what's left on the clock after that kick. So I assume it's 5 seconds. You know, if he misses it, it's 5 seconds. And they've got the ball at, what, your 49-yard line. I don't really think there's confidently, you could try, you know, a 4-second play and call timeout quickly. Like just some, so the quickest pass you've ever seen to pick up, you know, I don't know, a few more yards, because from there you're talking about a kick that I just don't even think is worth trying. I mean, I suppose with 1 second on the clock, you try anything, but you probably would want to get at least 5 or 6 yards there. I don't know if there was time to do it. So I don't know that the floor was falling out from underneath McDermott on choosing to kick it there. I don't think they're in a bet, you know, unless you're really scared of the Hail Mary, which you could choose to be because they did just give one up a couple weeks ago, but, you know, fine. Most likely you're going to overtime if he doesn't make the kick. I don't think where you are hurts you, but I do think what could have hurt him if the kick was missed is the way the Bills played the end of that drive leading up to the kick, because they had no timeouts left. And McDermott chose to use a timeout on a challenge on a fourth down play by Tua that was ruled a first down initially. And I didn't think it was worth challenging. It wasn't a blowout, but I didn't think it was worth it. And he cost them a timeout there. And, you know, that's very tough. They went into that drive with one timeout. And then I think Allen got sacked and they had to use it. And that was it. So I think that kick doesn't go through. They win anyway. It probably is still like this conversation we're having right now. Like, nobody's really hot about it.
But, man, I don't know.
It was close.
It
was close to being a real trouble spot, I think, for him.
Well, you think about, maybe you'll remember the details right off. Philadelphia last year. What was the problem? So there was a kneel down at the end of regulation.
Mm-hmm.
But there was something more. There was more than that.
Well, he used a timeout to ice the kicker
when
he kicked the 59-yard winning or tying field goal.
What?
So he burned one. They got the ball back with 20 seconds left and either only had one timeout or no timeouts. I don't remember.
Okay.
I'd have to look up the play-by-play. But he burned a timeout there and got the ball back after the tying field goal and just coaching the team that was victimized by 13 seconds, sat on it, and that was the end of the... So I think sitting on it was precipitated by burning the timeout to ice the kicker. If you had the timeout in your pocket, you could have maybe tried to do something there. And that was what really set me off on that game.
And you were not alone. I mean, that game, that example came up all offseason on the subject of McDermott. But I would just say, how bad is that really? You know, like, how many coaches would have done the same thing? More than half? Where people actually believe in icing the kicker. They don't want to see the data on that. It's sort of a logical instinct. Coaches feeling like this is how they sort of deserve to get paid to be coaches, by doing things like calling timeout before your field goal. Like, somehow that's going to work. And then kneeling at that spot, also, that's not that uncommon. So I guess I'm saying like that about this here, where it's there and you say, well, if they lose the game, how big of a topic is that? How even much different is that from Philadelphia? It's kind of still one where you really have to squint, like, okay. I mean, the casual fan is just not going to really care about those kind of details. And that's not to say that it's wrong to, but it's like, oh, well. Okay, I get it. Sure, you could have done something else here. And that would have been yesterday, too. I think even maybe more interesting on that field goal yesterday is that it was supposed to be too far. And McDermott did a thing, too, about how he watched the warm-up. And even though somebody thought it was too far, he decided it wasn't. Like, he was really pumping himself up about this kick. And If he misses, there's not only what matters more, I think, probably should be, is what happens to the game, happens to the outcome of the game, but you have just one more on the pile with Bass.
Right.
Because you're giving him one that he's not supposed to be able to make. But he does. I mean, it's like a double win. Because you maybe, if you will, I say maybe, save him.
You save him and you don't have another log on your time management fire. To go along with all the other, the other ones. It would have been another one of those that would just fall out of anyone's mouth when they're making the case for, like, why this guy is so flawed. He's just never going to get there for you. Like, here's an example. And, you know, those aren't all direct correlation, smoking gun type. Even the Philly thing that I was upset about. Like, you could try to move the ball there late with 20 seconds or whatever it was left to go and get nowhere. And, you know, so who cares? Like, none of this was a guarantee. It's just the choices in the moment. What are we doing here? And I don't know. I did not like the challenge at all.
Then there's Houston, where they did the more aggressive thing right at the end of the game, and that didn't work. So, yeah. I just think, too, you know, for all the years of talking about these kinds of things, most coaches kind of give – there are one or two debatable, at best, decisions in games, and whoever loses is going to hear about it, right? And this team is just, you know, back to the where we started, just not done that much losing.
Whoever loses is going to hear about it, or if the coach is in deep enough, you're going to hear about it even though you won. See the Eagles and Nick Sirianni today. Because that there's a lot, and I don't have the detail. I was kind of in and out of that game, like red zone only. So I don't know, but I just know there was a lot of reference to, like, what is he doing over there with the fourth down stuff? So I don't even know if I agree with that take. Like, that's how little I know about the detail. I just know that
you can win and still get.
He's getting smacked around today for some stuff.
Well, hopefully he has good support. Or just a wonky Wi-Fi so he doesn't know. Eric Wood at 4-803-0550. For us, Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR. Bills over the Dolphins for the 13th time in 14 meetings. 30-27 on Tyler Bass's game winner from 61 yards out. Great way to set the franchise record is at the gun to win it. Pretty good. Only if the Bills were down by one or two could that have been better.
Sure, because worst case scenario was, again, you know, barring something preposterous, you're probably going to overtime. And, like, I don't know. I mean, neither team was stopping anyone. Like, that looked to me like the kind of game, if it had gotten overtime, I did get to that thought process as the Bills were sort of, I don't know, that game-winning drive was kind of a struggle. Like, it didn't look good almost from the start. You know, like, those drives begin, and you're just like, bing, bing, bing. You're like, okay, they're going to do this. This was more like, are they going to get there? And you didn't really ever feel like they were there. Maybe when the flag gets thrown on Poyer, you think, like, if that's pass interference, maybe you're home. But it turned out not to be, and so you end up just getting the 15.
Man, what a bad play.
Yeah, no kidding.
What a bad play.
Worst case, you're going to, and the coin flip would have been the thing, I think, because, again, both of those teams were just moving the ball, trading touchdowns, and I wouldn't have felt great about Miami getting the ball first at all.
It's a 61-yard field goal, so there's that. But really, that sequence there, that series, would be maybe the worst part of this loss for the Dolphins. To have tied it, they kick it through the end zone, which I don't know if that wasn't a spot where, not because of the clock, I'm not really, Allen's going to get there probably, you know, but you're going to have to stop him. Mm-hmm. Like, that's plenty of time, minute 38. But I wonder if maybe Miami could have opted for to have the, if it was doable, you have to execute the kickoff.
So you're giving them the 30-yard line, whereas, you know, a return could do better than that.
So from the 30, if the 40 were the line where the Bills needed to get to try the field goal, that's 30 yards.
Right.
The Bills get to 3rd and 14. There's a sack and then an incomplete pass for Kincaid. And Allen was missing on that drive. So you've got 3rd and 14. They jump offside. And then you have the Poyer play. And that's going to be a punt. It's not interference.
Right.
And now how do you look? Now it's your chance with less than a minute, but also you get Tyreek Hill.
Right.
Like, also enough time to get maybe 30 yards and get a field goal off to win the game. But you did it to yourself, Miami, that guy Chop Robinson and then Poyer really bad. They get to 3rd and 3. Allen to Hollins there. I mean, he could always probably run for 3 yards, but it's the first down pass to Hollins, and that's as far as the Bills get. Right? That's the Miami 43-yard line. Well, the next play. No, that's a 4-yard pass to Hollins. It was back-to-back to Hollins. So that's as far as the Bills get. And they still were able to win the game.
Yeah.
That's the worst kind of loss when
these
penalties, you just didn't need them.
I mean, you're going into the game, the record you've got, your quarterback's been out, he's back. He played great, I think, Tua. He played as well as he's ever played against the Bills. And still, I mean, his numbers don't look as eye-popping. They got dinged for like a 25-yard loss on that final play. Like Waddle's game stats are like negative yards because he got tripped there.
That's the worst way to lose.
Rousseau at the end.
In fantasy.
So in fantasy, or if you had Tua's over-passing number, he was over it
before that
play. Yeah, 251 something was the number, and he was over it. And then you get that, and
that's
the end of that.
You're right.
So tough one there. But, yeah, I mean, he played really well, and you got beat by a 61-yard kick. Like, I wouldn't blame them if they're getting on the plane going, what do we got to do?
No, I mean, I would expect it. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't know that about the prop. Waddle ends up 2 for -4. Waddle, who doesn't have a catch until that last drive, gets one. Then he gets cleated and is all bloody, I guess. They take care of that, goes back on and catches a touchdown. But then that -23, I'm sure some fantasy results were tipped either by Tua, but more likely by Waddle, who would have been starting in, you know, most lineups. All right, well, enough about that. Eric Wood coming up next. It is Football Monday on WGR. Sal will join us later with the latest on Bills injuries and more from yesterday's game. Football Monday brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you. And also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app